This is the Winches of Talking newspaper for the week ending the 6th of November 2020. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of November, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful, and your other reader today is Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legrees on 01962 861 229. If there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are Charity Scraps Armhouse Plans, Hundreds Object to Plan for Beauty Spot, and Silver Hill Plans Set to be Unveiled. Even unveiled. Can we have the first headline story, please, Noel?
Yes, Charity Scraps Armhouse Plans. Part of an ambitious expansion of Winchester's main armhouse charity has been scrapped. St John's Winchester had planned to develop a block of land on Cheswell Street, which is currently a row of dilapidated Victorian terraced houses. The charity intended to demolish the buildings and build 16 almshouses, but progress seemed to have stalled, and the scheme had been removed from the St John's website. Their plans have had a long, convoluted history. Planning permission was given in 2005 and 2012 for a St John's scheme, but they were never put into action. Clive Cook, director of the charity, told the Chronicle that the Cheswell Street plans have now been dropped and the Cheswell Street site is to be sold. He said, "The scheme was complex and a recent cost escalation prompted us to review the economics of the project. As a result, we decided not to proceed with this particular site, and we are now in serious discussions to sell the site, including part of the site to the Cheswell Theatre, to facilitate the development of their annex, which will benefit the wider community. But at this point, nothing final has been determined." When asked how much the scheme had cost, Mr. Cook answered, "Nothing final has been determined with respect to the site, but when it is, we will make an appropriate announcement." The decision is an opportunity for Cheswell Theatre and the Winchester Dramatic Society, which has long hoped to upgrade its facilities by expanding along Cheswell Street. Society trustee David Small said, "Our activities have continued to expand, but until now we have not been able to enlarge our footprint in Cheswell Street. Negotiations with St John's Winchester are well advanced, allowing the acquisition of land so that we will be able to improve and extend facilities all round, including disabled access, facilities for children, plus a small second performance space. This will enhance the viability of the Cheswell Theatre as a vibrant community arts centre well into the future." In 2012, a redevelopment at its base, the 12th century St Peter's Church, including a new foyer rehearsal space, workshop and bar, was rejected by the City Council. St Peter's Church was last used for services in 1949. It has been used for amateur theatre since 1963. Mr Cook said the charity's other development on Colebrook Street, next to its main block of flats, was unaffected. "Our Colebrook scheme for 15 new almshouses is proceeding at present, and we have put the works out to tender. If we receive appropriate bids, we hope to commence works in the spring of next year." He said the charity had been reviewing its operations. In December 2019, the charity adopted an ambitious long-term strategic plan to expand its accommodation and services, including out in the wider community. This is being reviewed in the light of the pandemic, but the charity is resilient and will emerge stronger from this crisis. "We believe we will source other sites for new accommodation that are better located for our expansion plans and the delivery of the excellent care for which we are known."
And I've got the second headline story. The planning battle over a much-loved Winchester beauty spot has erupted As the Chronicle went to press, Alan Stone's plans to build on Water Garden had received 563 public objections. Back in 2018, the former leader of Hampshire UKIP purchased the land off Colebrook Street, sparking fears that it would be developed. At the time, he promised this would not be the case, and is now facing huge opposition. Ted Wake, the chairman of Hampshire Gardens Trust, said, "The Watercloth Garden is an exquisite and perfect place that enriches this corner of the heart of Winchester in the most wonderful way. For such a small space, to create such a strong impact in this location is a reflection of the care, attention and foresight of the original designers and Sir Peter Smithers, who left the garden as a fitting legacy for the people of Winchester. Anyone who knows that the Watercloth Garden will know that it would be an act of reckless vandalism to destroy this place for the sole benefit of the owner, whose purpose is simply to maximise their financial gain at the expense of all else. This planning application states disingenuously that the Watercloth Garden has no heritage significance. This is far from the truth. Members of the public have until November 11th to object by writing to Winchester City Council. The Water Garden was created by Sir Peter Smithers, who served as Winchester MP from 1950 to 1964. A spokesman for the City of Winchester Trust said, "We don't just want to half-heartedly object the application because the house does not look very nice, because the applicant will come back with improved plans. The principle is we do not want any development here. We are keen to not have anything that will ruin the symmetry of this very peaceful area. We are doing all we can to make people aware of these plans." The spokesman added that the planning application was submitted to the City Council on September the 14th, but the orange notices were not put up until around October the 24th. To view the plan, go to planningapps.winchester.gov.uk. That's planningapps.winchester.gov.uk. Let's have the third and final headline story.
Silver Hill plan set to be unveiled. Will the City Council pull it off this time? Plans for the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, formerly known as Silver Hill, are set to be unveiled to the public. Work could start as soon as February next year, so long as locals are pleased and Cabinet members give permission. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "We will be sharing our proposals to breathe new life into the city centre very soon and can't wait to hear what people think when they see the positive impacts of their consultation feedback on our plans. This part of Winchester has been underused for so long and it is our chance to change that. The proposals that we will be sharing represent many years of hard work. It is so important that we get this right. The future prosperity and economic health of the city depends on it." Draft proposals will go before Cabinet on November the 10th. If signed off, our officers will then host a number of public consultation events. A virtual exhibition is planned and there will be four public online consultation sessions and a questionnaire for people to share their feedback. For anyone not able to access the internet, copies of all the information and feedback forms will be sent by post or on request. Leader of the council, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said, "We have already conducted numerous consultation events to come up with these plans. The proposals are very much based on what the community has asked for. We are excited to be sharing these proposals and excited to be making firm decisions as this regeneration scheme starts to take its form." The development area includes Winchester Bus Station, King's Walk, the Old Friars Great Medical Centre and Coitbury House. It is set to be mixed use, offering new affordable homes, flexible workspaces, a thriving nighttime economy and visually pleasing public spaces. Head of Programme, Varian Lyons, said, "We are looking to retain the younger generations. Currently, they'll finish their studies in the city and move away, sometimes returning when they're older and often not at all. This is something we want to change. The project has to deliver. It will be a catalyst of vibrancy for the city." The Silver Hill project first came to fruition in 1996.
And that concludes the headline stories. And we now continue with Death Notices, then Christian Comment, followed by Letters to the Editor, First Person, Editorial Comment, Belgarum Diary, Question and Answer My Winchester, and we'll end with Items of General News. And I'll start with the Death Notices. Baxter. Robert Ogilvy Baxter, at home, aged 84. Boosmans, Hazel Peggy Boosmans, that's peacefully in hospital. Brown, Major George Gordon Brown, retired, peacefully, aged 95. Bruti, Vera Elise Bruti, peacefully at home, aged 86. Campbell, Colonel Malcolm Campbell, peacefully at home with his family at his bedside. Fiddler, Sheila Mary Fiddler, late of Alsford, aged 89. Hamilton, Jean Mary Nay Harwood Hamilton, peacefully at home, aged 90. Knight, Valerie Ann Knight, peacefully in hospital, aged 62. Perry, David Lionel Perry, peacefully aged 93. Ward, Lorraine Margaret Ward, aged 81. And finally, Wells, Robert Wells, of Rollingswood Road, Winchester, at Brendan Care Park Road, aged 93. And now Noel's got the Christian comment.
Yes, this is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge at St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester, and it's headed Out of the Depths. Out of the depths have we cried unto you, O Lord. So begins Psalm 130, that great outpouring of lament in a time of darkness. Lament has not always been fashionable in modern England, but perhaps it is due a comeback in this most difficult time for our city and nation. Both Christianity and Judaism give lamentation a central role in spiritual life. When we feel despair or even angry with God, it is right to name that and to pour it out. That is why the Psalms have spoken so deeply to people in every age. They are such human anthems. They are emotionally honest. They don't shy away from what is difficult. My God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus cried out on the cross. His words are a recollection of another lament, Psalm 22. Why are you so far from helping me from the words of my groaning? O my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but find no rest. Those whose patterns of living and sleeping have been disturbed by COVID-19 and its consequences will understand. The psalmist captures the draining effect of continuous suffering. This weekend we keep Remembrance Sunday. This reminds us that we are not the first generation to face great challenges which turn lives upside down, or to unite across age groups to meet them, and that we are not the first to have buried loved ones before their time, or to experience such fierce tests of our faith and hope. To keep hoping and to keep faith with God and with each other is an awesome calling, especially at this time. But as a city and as a nation, we have done it before and we can do it again. The people of God have done it in every age. The first step is to be willing to wait. We must wait for our salvation, must wait, we would say, on God. This waiting can be in itself an expression of hope, to wait in the darkness, trusting that day will come. That's the turning point of Psalm 130. I look for the Lord, my soul waits for him, in his word is my trust. My soul flees to the Lord, more than those who watch for the morning. God has not forsaken us, despite the enormous challenges we now face. We wait in what seems a dark night, but the darkness is not total. It has never overcome the light. Day will break again. The 1914 war took far longer and involved far greater sacrifices than anyone had expected, but gave way to peace in 1918, armistice. So this disease will, in the end, give way to restored health as scientists develop preventions and cures. God speed their work. God gives strength to those who care in hospitals and homes for the suffering. God give all of us strength and the grace to persevere. O Israel, trust in the Lord, for with the Lord there is mercy, and with him is great power to redeem.
We'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. We've got 13 letters this week, and I'll start. P.V. Rogers thinks there are too many trees on St. Giles Hill. Sir, Simon Lever has too rosy a view of trees in his letter regarding St. Giles Hill. That's letters October the 22nd. He writes to defend the trees there as a place where birds and wildlife flourish. I wish it was so. Much of St. Giles Hill has many sycamore trees and imported species which actually support very few insects, the crucial part of the chain of life. Native oak trees, however, support hundreds of species, but there aren't many mature ones on the steep slopes. So, although St. Giles Hill looks lovely as a wildlife habitat, it is not so good. Look at the photos of Victorian and Edwardian times of the Broadway with St. Giles Hill in the background, and you'll be surprised by how few trees were there. They've been allowed to grow largely unchecked since the Second World War and blocked many fine views across the city centre. It is something that Andrew Rutter, the former conservation architect at the City Council, has written about in the Chronicle. St. Giles Hill needs to have a radical programme of pruning and felling to open up the hillside. That would boost the flora and fauna significantly. The trouble is that there is a cult of the tree that has evolved in the last few decades, whereby people think that everyone should be protected. Trees are lovely, but there are simply too many on St. Giles Hill. That was from P.V. Rogers, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
And Donald Black says, ridiculous rules. Sir, as we slip ever further into an over-regulated state following rules from scientists with no humanity, may I add yet another example of ridiculous regulation. A friend of mine was to have been married abroad in May, but that had to be cancelled because of the pandemic. She has now arranged the wedding in Hampshire in November, but has been told that her father may not walk her down the aisle. This is a very emotional and important part of the ceremony, and as no doubt father and daughter will have a hug sometime during the day, it does seem quite unnecessary to ban it. Let us have some common sense and flexibility applied. Donald Black, Sarum Close, Winchester.
And John Seeger Green is writing about St. Swithin's. Sir, further to my recent letter from an article in the Church Times, March 27, 2009, by David Keyes, which has been handed to me, I learnt that A. St. Swithin's sanctification was engendered by a bit of church politics around 950, as the then Bishop Æthelwold needed a persona to embody the spirit of his new cathedral priory, having replaced the secular canons with Benedictine monks. B. So St. Swithin's bones were exhumed and placed in a gold and silver reliquary and became a focus of considerable veneration. C. In 1005, Bishop Alphege took St. Swithin's skull with him to Canterbury, where he was promoted there, while in the Winchester, the reliquary containing the bones, less head, took pride of place over the high altar when the Norman rebuilt the cathedral. D. A century later, Alphege's successors, having no Winchester connection, somehow or other let slip the saint's skull to Evreux. Meantime, an arm of the saint was taken to Stavanger, Norway. E. Cardinal Beaufort left instructions that a grand new shrine to St. Swithin should be built, next to which he was buried. That shrine was inaugurated in 1476 and was destroyed in the Reformation. Dr. Crook, the cathedral archaeologist, has discovered parts of that shrine. Perhaps your newspaper, or one of its readers, might like to organise a fundraising so that St. Swithin may be suitably housed in a cathedral where he was bishop. And that was from John Seeger Green, St. Cross Road.
And Jeanette Lloyd's letter is headed Unique Habitat. Sir, I'm surprised that Anne Gildersleeve, Chronicle Letters, October 29, is not more familiar with the Wildlife Trust, since she lives very close to St. Cross, where the organisation has been managing the meadows around the hospital for many years. A crucial point is that this particular habitat is very rare. Our chalk streams are unique in the world. Grazing cattle are a key feature of their ecosystems and have been so for many centuries. They stimulate and fertilise a greater range of native plants. The choice of British white cattle is apposite, since they are an ancient breed. With this in mind, it would probably be invidious to complain about cowpats in the light of the general sweep of history. I would perhaps recommend to her many of the excellent walks on the chalk downs around our city where Wellingtons aren't needed. Jeanette Lloyd, Oliver's Battery Gardens, Winchester.
And David Atraji, he's written about garden waste. Sir, last month I responded to Winchester City Council's residents' email, September the 17th, informing us of the new policy to levy additional charges on residents for the removal of garden waste. They did not respond. Today I received another email confirming that the current free garden waste service was coming to an end. Imagine my surprise at finding out that the current service had been provided for free all these years. I had assumed it had been paid for through my council tax. Anyway, if you would care to publish my email to WCC, well, maybe someone from Winchester City Council will see it and respond to it. Sir, madam, I have not turned my front garden into a driveway. I have made a socially and environmental responsible decision to keep my garden, which will, of course, soak up rainwater and perhaps reduce the impact of further flooding, similar to that we experienced in neighbouring streets 3 weeks ago. Yet it appears that I'm being penalised for my social responsibility. What does Winchester City County Council's Environment Impact Assessment say about levying additional taxes upon those who retain and maintain eco and biodiversity-friendly gardens? The answer is probably that gardeners who admire David Attenborough's philosophy are the least likely to be militant. So let's charge them more and not worry about it. If I was as cynical as WCC appeared to be, I would also prophesize that this would be yet another levy that will be increased by more than inflation every year. This whole affair is all rather depressing, predictable and depressing. And that was from David Atraji, Elm Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And Rachel Curtis has a hospital concern. Sir, like many others, we were very glad when the Prime Minister announced that the NHS would have a big boost to its spending power. We did not know that this might result in residents of Winchester and the surrounding district having a reduced service at their hospital. The report in the Hampshire Chronicle, October 29th, indicates that a new hospital might be built in the Basingstoke area and that Winchester might lose its A&E and maternity services. I'm in the latter half of my 70s. My husband is in his early 80s, and we do not feel especially elderly, except when of necessity we have to visit Basingstoke Hospital and cope with the many dual carriageways and roundabouts to get there. The country should be discouraging extra travel, which causes more traffic pollution and congestion, and seems to us that the money would be better spent improving the existing hospital in Winchester and perhaps creating a new one for Basingstoke if necessary, or improving that. Rachel Curtis, Kilmerston.
Now, Peter Rees, he's talking about rogue landlords. Sir, it is not surprising that in the current conditions with serious problems predating the COVID pandemic, that there have been two significant actions related to Winchester rogue landlords. In May, the landlord of a Stanmore house, who converted a three-bedroomed house to seven bedrooms without planning permission, was ordered on appeal to reinstate the house to its original configuration by the planning inspector. WCC obtained an enforcement notice, which was upheld. This was followed by another Stanmore landlord ordered to repay rent to students of nearly £30,000 for not having an HMO licence. This situation is not unfamiliar. The failure to act by WCC as the local authority is pitiful. Enforcement and the policing of HMOs have become almost a joke that has allowed rogue landlords to flourish without proper monitoring and regulation. WCC has only four staff, engaged in HMO work, two full-time and two part-time, a reduction from six when two were not replaced. Its HMO staff are responsible for both monitoring and planning issues. Both the previous Tory administration and the Lib Dems have ignored the scale of rule and breaking in this sector. There are numerous examples of similar cases, but WCC has not bothered to increase its enforcement to normal staffing levels or raise perpetual issues requiring enforcement action. Consequently, these two cases are the tip of the iceberg. In the UK, privately renting tenants are currently paying over £10 billion to landlords in substandard properties. Privately rented households have increased by over 1 million in the past 10 years. Landlords do not require planning permission to create an HMO. It is not a criminal offence not to apply for an HMO licence. There is clearly significant exploitation by landlords of students, the very low paid on 0 hours and others. This is compounded by lack of interest from the previous and current administration. That was from Peter Rees, a member of Winchester constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Guinevere Harvey writes about chaotic closure. Sir, as a long-term resident of Hyde, much of which has been on Hyde Street itself, I feel we have a vested interest in replying to Dr. A.E. Russell's letter in the Chronicle on October 22nd. There have been some very successful improvements to traffic in Hyde over the last few years, one being the introduction of pinch curbs. I hope I have the right term for describing the narrowing of the road to allow one car through at a time in Hyde Street itself, and the other, the introduction of a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. Sadly, this badly needs to be policed with the introduction of CCTV cameras to catch those exceeding the limit. But the idea is an excellent one, which not only cuts speed to a much safer level, but also cuts down the pollution. However, this latest closure of access to and from Hyde is nothing short of catastrophic in the wider scheme of the city. Traffic has built up in Worthy Lane, Andover Road, City Road, Jury Street and North Walls. This has inevitably called a higher level of pollution and a significant increase in the time it takes to cross the city. I've been told on good authority that the time it takes to come from Highcliffe to Hyde has increased by 15 to 20 minutes. Are we not trying to bring down the level of pollution, not increase it, both for the benefit of the health of our citizens, but also in the fight against climate change in general? The residents of Hyde Street cannot protect their small area to the detriment of the rest of the city. Guinevere Harvey, Danes Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Tim Lowry's writing about Park and Ride. Sir, if the land at Three Maids Hill, the A34 roundabout, is available for alternative use, then it should be used for a much-needed park and ride, for which it is ideally located. That's in the Chronicle, October the 22nd. The environmental and health benefits due to reduced traffic on the Andover Road travelling into Winchester would be considerable. Why is the City Council continuing to ignore this pressing need? That says Tim Lowry of Chilbolton.
And Mary Pearson expresses dismay at plans. Sir, an article on page 3 of last week's Hampshire Chronicle, together with letters on page 22, outlines an application to build on the beautiful water garden in Colebrook Street. In the hope that other readers will share my dismay and also wish to express this to the City Council, I will set out below my recent email of objection. I wish to strongly object to the proposed changes to the water garden in Colebrook Street. Although in private ownership, this garden has provided untold pleasure over the last at least 50 years to Winchester's residents and visitors. It is unique. I believe that while created by Sir Peter Smithers, it also linked to Winchester's noted historian Barbara Carpenter Turner, and it incorporates one of the ancient springs on which our city is built. The gentle sound of this water, together with the beauty of the garden as a whole, and its view of the cathedral, invariably evoke exclamations of delight from Winchester visitors to Winchester. They are things that residents such as myself never tire of, and which make us feel we are very lucky to live here. I do hope the City Council will do all in its power to ensure that something so precious remains unspoiled for ourselves and generations to come. With November the 11th as a closing date for objections to reach the Council, I hope many readers will care enough to make their voices heard before it is too late. Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winchester.
And Simon Lever is also talking about the water garden. He calls it destruction. Sir, I was shocked on reading the potential destruction of the much-loved and admired water garden, which is so close to Winchester Cathedral, Chronicle, October 29th. The individual who purchased this unique water garden stated clearly that he would not build on it. Sadly, the council did not act as quickly as required, opening up a situation where even more urgent action is now required. This is part of our heritage, and under no circumstances should it be destroyed for the sake of selfish financial gain, especially when Mr. Stone stated, what's the point of having something that beautiful and building on it? It seems words are cheap. Visitors from around the world are truly in awe of this most beautiful water garden. The council must be more alert to applications that destroy our cherished heritage. Forget the expansion of housing. This is an ancient location which must be protected. From Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And Eileen Berry complains about filthy Winchester. Sir, I'm sorry to have to say this, but you've heard of that song, Dirty Old Town? Well, Winchester streets and pavements are filthy. Cracked pavements wherever you look. I attempted to get out of my car in the open car park in the Brooks. There was 2 inches of water, and as the rain came down, it was spreading even further by the minute. Lockdown should have given the City Council and the Hampshire County Council every opportunity to clean the drains, and for those drains that have collapsed, to mend them. Do we ever consider night cleaning? And why is it, even though so many shops have left the city, we still have rubbish on the side of the streets? The cry was over a year ago, we can do better. At St. Morris's Covert, I counted a dozen bikes and all homeless. Where has the plan gone? You cannot blame COVID for everything. Winchester and those who are supposed to be looking after it, woe betide you if this ancient capital with it all its historic history and buildings start to disintegrate. Whilst the documentaries on TV have been showing King Alfred and his descendants and all their achievements, Winchester seems to be letting the side down. Alfred is recognised in the world as a great leader and a great king, which in turn brings people from all over the world to see where it all began. What a disappointment some of them must be feeling. If you want Winchester to get back on its feet after all this, after COVID, you better start looking to preserve what you've got, plus addressing what is going to happen again, flooding. These comments I'm making are because I love this city. For me, it's been my inspiration, my dedication for years. Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Week, Winchester.
But Dennis thinks there's a threat to view. Sir, our visit to Winchester this week from another cathedral city took in some wonderful sights. One of which I saw in your Chronicles article this morning is a threat to a scenic view to the rear of the cathedral. If you let developers get away with their schemes, you will have little to offer your touristy visitors tomorrow. Beware and protect what you have, says Robert Dennis of Rochester, Kent. And that was the last letter for this week. Thank you to all contributors. It's time for this week's first person, and it's by Joanna Lewis, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, and her headline is So Here We Go Again. Zoom! Just one look and my heart went boom. Suddenly we were on the moon, flying high across a neon sky. If only the word zoom still meant, for those of a certain age, just an 80s song by Fat Larry's band. Now, alas, it's also the case quite a few of us could be in it. 8 months on, for many working life remains sedentary and online. For me, it's Zoom lectures and seminars. It's both intense and distracting. Last week, at the start of the Scramble for Africa lesson, I was interrupted by the sight of my screen double chin reflecting back at me. Later, a student was making a long, involved point when she stopped suddenly. Sorry, she said, I got distracted by my hand. Bless. As with pandemic life generally, there's a constant flipping back and forth between normal and totally nuts. Lack of control and a sudden change can do your head in. I was running a 2-hour seminar with students in 4 different time zones and probably facing £250,000 worth of graduate fees, only to have 2 blokes up the road dig through a cable. The screen, work and life went very dark for a while. Sure, there are positives, as with all COVID-inspired change. Online teaching gives you the chance to get to know your students more. It offers the means to divide and rule instantly by putting them into virtual chat rooms at your whim. I've arranged many extra talks and fun activities. Former students feel able finally to talk about their experiences, but it can also be soul-destroying. It used to be that a successful teaching week meant lecturing on a topic you had mastered over a decade, presenting vast amounts of complex arguments and data. Now you judge yourself on whether you managed to launch your online poll asking, was Congo genocide, and if after 3 days you've managed to stop the results popping up every time you log on. Commuting has been weird too. Gone is the fight for a seat, the mansplaining and the blocked toilet. Last Friday I had not just one carriage to myself, but four. I felt like the Queen and gave the Royal Wave chugging through Surbiton. It's actually sad seeing Waterloo Station so quiet. More pigeons than people now strut across the concourse. I feel like I'm in my own disaster moving, waiting for direction. It's also shocking seeing the number of homeless at the exits. Eight lying in the street in a row one day. Most were young men. And now, here we go again. 4 weeks of lockdown. Okay, last time it was for longer, but then we thought it would be. That would be it. Now it's winter, it's irritating, and it could recur. So what's our plan? What are we going to do differently? In May, once I stopped feeling like roadkill post-COVID, I decided to do as much as I could of what I would bitterly regret not doing, if I'd been a goner. So I rainbow-coded my wardrobe, emptied the attic, and finished writing my first novel. It's coming out in a few months. It's politically incorrect, still makes me laugh, and is definitely a case of publish and be damned. But this time around, no competitive COVID syndrome for me. I'll simply be the best chilled lockdown person ever. True, I was impressed by Tony Mortimer's recent revelation. The East 17 band member read his first book during lockdown and has since read over 60. Not for me. I've borrowed a CD player that works, and I'm going to play all my dusty, abandoned discs while sourcing all my Christmas prezzies from local independents. And I'll be avoiding anything that says made in China like the plague.
I've got the editorial comment. One door closes, another opens. St John's Winchester Charity has decided to scrap plans to redevelop a row of dilapidated Victorian terraced houses into 16 new almshouses. The scheme was originally given approval 15 years ago, in 2005, and since then the houses have become more run down and more of an eyesore on Chesil Street. Thankfully, through the ending of this scheme, means another one, which has long held ambitions, can hopefully now go ahead. We are pleased to hear that the Chesil Theatre and the Winchester Dramatic Society will finally be able to improve their facilities. The fantastic theatre company deserves to be able to showcase what they do to more people, and hopefully this will now be possible. We look forward to seeing what the future holds for this site. Sadly, Lockdown 2 has forced the theatre to postpone its latest production, as today the Winchester District will join the rest of the country under new measures to prevent the spread of coronavirus. We hope you can all stay safe. And Noel's going to look at the Belgarum Diary.
Yes, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. I've got three items. First, at least I think it's three items. Anyway, zero respect for memorial is the first one. There's a rather unpleasant picture of a damaged war memorial at Holy Trinity Church in Winchester, like as if the bits have been broken off the steps. The names are those of young men who gave their lives for this country in the Great War. The memorial to their sacrifice stands in the grounds of Holy Trinity on Upper Brook Street in Winchester, but has recently been treated with zero respect and incurred serious damage. John Kimber, church warden, told Belgarum, "We are privileged to have a war memorial in our grounds commemorating the fallen from this parish in the First World War. I'm horrified at the way it's been treated during the lockdown. The base of it has been destroyed by many, I can't say youngsters or drunks or druggies, because we have witnessed adults as well. I cannot believe the attitude of people and would love to shame them with an article in your paper." And secondly, the headline is "Cops Rescue Swan." And there's a picture of a police car and a swan sitting there on a patch of grass. A swan had to be rescued by police after it was found sitting on a Winchester road. Hampshire Constabulary officers ushered the swan to a grassy verge by Garnier Road car park last Tuesday. The animal remained there while HART Wildlife Rescue were called to the incident. A post on the organisation's Facebook page said the swan didn't have any obvious external injuries but was clearly weak, so he had to come back to the hospital. His partner and cygnets were watching from the water. Upon examination, rescuers felt a mass in his esophagus, and the swan was sent to Cedar Veterinary Group in Alsford for an X-ray. The post added, the yet-to-be-identified foreign object showed up on the X-ray and was removed. He's now recovering at HART and should be back with his family soon. Please wish him a swift recovery. To help the organisation rescue more animals, donate to on their Just Giving page at www.justgiving.com/heartwildlife. And for donations via PayPal, email help@heartwildlife.org.uk. And the final one is still about animals. RSPCA fearing fireworks. RSPCA fear nervous animals will have to endure more firework displays this year due to lockdown. The charity worries this fireworks season could be the worst in decades for animals as more people opt for DIY displays at home due to COVID restrictions. The poll conducted by the charity revealed 21% of UK adults plan to hold a private display at home this year, twice as many as in 2019. Over the past 4 years, the animal welfare charity has received 1,543 calls about fireworks. The RSPCA animal welfare expert, Dr. Mark Kennedy, said, "We understand that people enjoy celebrating Bonfire Night, New Year's Eve and other key dates with fireworks, and we don't want to spoil the fun. Unfortunately, lockdown measures this year mean that very few organised public displays are likely to go ahead, and we suspect this means lots of families will be choosing to have their own displays at home."
It's time for Question and Answer My Winchester, and it's by Jonathan Edgington. He's a writer mainly of plays, and he comes from Littleton, and he tells us what he thinks of the city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? The Theatre Royal's Cafe Bar. They do great coffee. The coffee from the Flat White's Van in Market Street is pretty good too, though. And what's your favourite pub or bar? It's hard to choose between the Railway Inn, the High Tavern and the Black Boy. Three very unique and atmospheric pubs with great live music. And what's your favourite shop? Another hard choice. I'm torn between Debenhams, HMV and Warren & Son. What's your favourite building? Sadly, it's more of a ruin than a building these days, but I'd say Wolvesey Castle. I saw a lot of it in the summer of 2016 when my Robin Hood play was performed next to it in the gardens. What's your favourite view? I very much enjoy standing on the city bridge looking down the river. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Oh, there are several to choose from, but I'm going for King Alfred's statue and the round table in the Great Hall. I'm hoping to one day write a play around King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. What's Winchester's best-kept secret? Barton Meadows Nature Reserve in Headbourne Worthy, where I do volunteer work for the Wildlife Trust. And what's the best thing about Winchester? The Cathedral Grounds, where I love to sit and do a bit of people-watching whilst eating my lunch. And the worst? The lack of any fringe theatre. I'd love to be able to pop into a room above a pub like you can do in London or some other small, non-traditional theatre space. If there was one thing you could do to change about Winchester, what would it be? The traffic and the parking. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Steeped in history, but never sleepy. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 6th of November at 7:06 a.m. and begins at 4:30 p.m. On Wednesday the 11th of November, it ends at 7:15 a.m. and begins at 4:22 p.m. We're going to continue with some items of general news. And the first one is by Noel.
Yes, it's a big article. It says, what will happen to Winchester's Hospital? The Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, in Winchester has again hit the front pages as its medium and long-term future is in doubt, with the NHS looking to build a new hospital that it says is better suited to the needs of patients in the modern NHS. Last week's news that managers have narrowed their search down to two sites in and around Basingstoke has again sparked fears that the RHCH is heading for a long-term role as a cottage hospital similar to the War Memorial Hospital in Andover. How did we get here? The future of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital has been in the spotlight for decades. As far back as the 1980s and 1990s, as big city hospitals such as Southampton grew larger and more specialised, fears were expressed that smaller ones, such as the RHCH, would be squeezed. More than 20 years ago, the Chronicle first reported concerns for the maternity unit and A&E. In truth, many specialist services have not been provided at the RHCH in years. With A&E, most serious life-threatening injuries do not go to the RHCH, but straight to Southampton General Hospital, even if it is further away. The recent school bus crash in Headbourne Worthy saw most, if not all, the victims taken to Southampton. The nub of the issue is that the NHS only has finite resources, finite numbers of staff, and yet is under the microscope to hit almost countless targets. Senior consultants have spoken at public meetings of the problems in getting the staff needed. Dr. Mirrodin Rees told a public meeting of the growing difficulties in offering the best service in hospitals the size of the RHCH. There were too few trained doctors to go round, and with small units such as Winchester, the breadth of practical experience and mentoring was lacking. But while the RHCH has lost certain specialisms to Basingstoke Hospital, it has focused on others such as breast cancer and strokes. That link-up has increased since the Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust merged with Basingstoke around 5 years ago. Earlier this year, a group of NHS organisations launched Hampshire Together, modernising our hospitals and health services with a public consultation over the future of general health services. In July, only 160 people logged on to a virtual meeting, and many of them were NHS staff. MP Steve Bryan, a former health minister, called on senior managers to be transparent about their plans. He said, at the end of the day, you are building a new hospital that will create a centre of gravity and it will have an impact on services in Winchester. You have to be honest about that. You have to fess up and be honest about that because you're not going to create acute, obstetric and consultant-led maternity care at, let's say, Junction 17, Dummer, Basingstoke. And then again at Winchester. And then again a few miles down the road at Southampton. You're just not going to do that. No regulator in the world, let alone any minister, would sign that off. So there is an implication to doing this, and there will be winners and there will be losers out of doing this. There is growing public frustration about the perceived lack of openness from senior managers. In 2019, April, Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said to the Chronicle about investment in the A&E unit at the RHCH. The thinking is at the various earliest stages, but at its heart is a commitment to the emergency department at Winchester and improving and developing the services to meet local need. So, what happens now? A public consultation is due to be held in the new year. Managers say that will still go ahead and that they are open-minded about what the public say. Yet it is impossible to believe that they will scrap their two-site shortlist announced this week. So who makes the decision? Funding for a new hospital has been allocated to Hampshire with Boris Johnson's recent announcement about 40 new hospitals by 2030. And the final decision will be made by the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust in conjunction with other NHS organisations, with approval by the Department of Health and Social Care and the Treasury.
A walk-through coronavirus testing centre now opens in the city. Part of a Winchester car park has been converted into a coronavirus testing centre. The walk-through appointment-only testing facility opened last Thursday at Worthy Lane Car Park as part of measures to increase testing and reduce the spread of the virus. which is a city council, offered the space so that anyone with a COVID-19 symptoms can access a free swab test that takes less than a minute. Tests should be booked or ordered as soon as symptoms begin at NHS UK / coronavirus or by calling 119. And you can expect your result from the walk-in facility the following day. Testing is available for everyone, with additional support offered for vulnerable groups and people with disabilities. Anyone testing positive for the virus in England will be contacted by NHS Test and Trace to help them track their contacts. This will help people to identify who they may have been in close contact with, protecting others from further transmission. Close contact of those testing positive will also hear from NHS Test and Trace, advising them to stay at home for 14 days to prevent them from unknowingly spreading the virus. They will be advised to book a test if they develop symptoms.
School staff worried over social distancing. The government is being urged to protect school staff in Hampshire amid claims that social distancing is very difficult. Trade unions said Hampshire school staff are worried as children find social distancing very difficult and staff end up being in close contact with pupils. Union bosses said staff in Hampshire schools are facing a too high risk and feel they do not have adequate protection. The news comes as a national lockdown began on November the 5th, but schools will remain open. The government said the risks to children's education and well-being from not attending school outweighs any other risks. But some trade unions are calling for colleges and schools to close during lockdown, while others are asking for further support, including smaller bubbles and the reintroduction of shielding. According to the County Council, there have been 133 coronavirus cases across its 534 schools since September. Of these cases, 114 were recorded in October. Karen Williams, Joint Branch Secretary at the Hampshire State Education Branch of the National Education Union, NEU, said members are concerned about the reality of social distancing. Without fewer pupils in a class or more rooms, feedback from members suggests that many believe they cannot carry out their job effectively at 2 metres and are approaching children more closely than this. This is taking place in classroom settings where masks are not worn and where ventilation is often inadequate. Without increasing funding, schools will struggle to address these issues, and many of our members feel that they do not have adequate protection against airborne virus. She also said there are concerns about pupils mixing across bubbles on homeschool transport and in their own families and communities. They are asking the government for increased support for homeworking for staff, more investment in infection control measures, increased use of PPE and consideration of wider use of face coverings, as well as an effective test and trace system. The NEU has also launched a campaign to close schools and colleges as part of England's lockdown. Councillor Ros Chadd, Executive Member for Education and Skills at Hampshire County Council, said the government has issued extensive guidance about the measures that schools should put in place. She added, "We fully understand that staff may feel anxious and we encourage them to talk with the school's leadership to ensure their concerns are listened to and that where possible, additional measures are put in place to address those concerns."
And now, a pair suffer serious injuries in head-on collision. A main road near Winchester was blocked by a head-on collision. A SEAT car and a heavy goods vehicle collided on the B3335 Searles Hill in Twyford at around 9:15 a.m. on October the 29th. The male driver and female passenger of the SEAT sustained serious injuries and were taken to Southampton General Hospital. It is not known what their injuries are. Police officers and 3 ambulance services vehicles were on the scene. Traffic diversions were in place, but long tailbacks were caused on the road that links Eastleigh and Winchester. Bus services, including the number 69 from Winchester to the southern parishes, were diverted via Morstead. And there's a photograph of the 3 ambulances, all looking like they've got the flashing red lights and police cars and everything else.
Sad story. University student died in Storm Ciara crash. A delightful university student was killed when her motorcycle skidded on sand, left on a busy road in the wake of Storm Ciara, throwing her under an oncoming car. Final year events management degree student Amy Patton, 20, was riding her Piaggio GTS 125 after visiting her mum when she hit sand and silt washed into the road by the huge storm the previous day, an inquest heard. Amy of Portslade, Sussex, was riding back to the University of Winchester after visiting her mum when tragedy struck on February the 10th this year, the hearing was told. The Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award holder's bike veered into the opposite lane when she was thrown off and rolled under an oncoming Honda Civic on the A272 in Petersfield, West Sussex. Crawley's Coroner's Court heard the incident happened in a few short seconds and that Amy would have not known anything about her death. But it was said that the effects of Storm Ciara were so ferocious that Amy's death could not have been prevented. Dr. Karen Henderson, Assistant Coroner for West Sussex, said such was the ferocity of the storm that this could not have been foreseen and therefore could not have been prevented. This is therefore a terribly tragic event that the consequences of Storm Ciara leaving silt and sand on the road were causative of her death. She was indeed a most delightful, kind and considerate daughter, and it can only have left an enormous hole in the family. PC Steve Desuki-Harmon, who examined the scene shortly after the crash, said Amy's bike flayed violently from side to side in a movement known as the tank slapper, which only the most experienced motorcyclists can control. He confirmed that both motorists had been driving within the 60-mile speed limit and both vehicles were mechanically sound, but she agreed with the coroner that the Honda driver simply did not have enough time to avoid the collision in the tragic accident which happened within seconds. The Highways Agency confirmed sand and silt on the road was not a known issue in this area of road, and the farmer of the flooded land ensured steps had been taken to rectify the situation following Storm Ciara. Amy died of neck and chest injuries and traumatic rupture of the aorta, the main artery carrying blood from the heart, which could have proved rapidly fatal, according to a pathologist's report. Dr. Henderson concluded the cause of death was that of a road traffic collision and gave her sincere condolences to Amy's family.
A book reprinted to raise money for the homeless. A reprint of A Cat Called Smokey has been relaunched to help Winchester Church's Night Shelter and Trinity Winchester. Last year, sales of the book raised over £1,500 for Winchester young carers. The problem of homelessness is going to increase sharply as winter approaches, so now Smokey has offered to help again. Homelessness is Winchester Rotary President Richard Spalding's charity this year. Smokey's creator, Diana Brooks, herself a Winchester Rotarian, and illustrator Alan Edwards, a former Rotarian, accompanied by Richard and past president Nick Bell, took 200 copies to each charity last Wednesday, October the 28th. Smokey is a well-travelled cat. His story is already in Australia, Africa and France. He has told Diana he loves new places. The book, aimed at children from 3 to 7 years, tells Smokey's story. Excuse me. He is a three-legged cat who relies on his family and friends for help. The price is £8, £10 to include post and packing. Winchester Rotary can arrange free delivery in and around Winchester. There is a card inside each copy outlining the inspiration for the book. The email is fundraising@winchester-rotary.org if interested, and is accompanied by a picture of the book's front page and illustration with a really delightful looking little cat on a pillow, and then the two pictures of the Rotary group at Trinity Winchester and also at the Rotary party at the Night Shelter on Jury Street.
Guildhall opens as court to clear coronavirus backlog. Winchester Guildhall has opened as a temporary court this week to help clear the huge backlog of cases caused by the pandemic. The Ministry of Justice, MOJ, has announced that the historic building is being turned into one of 16 Nightingale courts across England and Wales. Several rooms in the Guildhall are available, as social distancing has forced the City Council to largely close it, with 11 or 13 members of staff at risk of redundancy. The rooms in the Civic Building are the three largest, the Battersea Hall, the King Charles Hall and the Conference Chamber. An MOJ spokesman said, Winchester Guildhall will open its doors as a Nightingale Court this week as part of the government's plan to tackle the impact of coronavirus on the justice system. The new site provides three extra courtrooms that will carry out civil work, such as small claims hearings. It will help to free up three courtrooms for jury trials at Winchester Combined Court. Nightingale Courts are among the measures that have been introduced to ensure courts recover from the pandemic as soon as possible. Courts Minister Chris Philip said, I am grateful to the Guildhall for joining the national effort to reduce delays and deliver speedier justice for victims. This is the latest step in our tireless work with the judiciary and legal sector in pursuing every available option to ensure our courts recover as quickly as possible. Winchester City Council leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, added, One of our highest priorities at the moment is to help our high streets recover, so I'm delighted that HM Courts and Tribunals have signed an agreement with the City Council to use the Guildhall as a Nightingale Court for the next 9 months. Not only will this help our local economy and businesses by driving up footfall and bringing people back to the centre, but it also ensures that one of our very special buildings is being made use of during these challenging times.
Hat trick of books for local children's author Emily. This autumn brings the publication of three books by Winchester children's author Emily Hawkins. The 38-year-old formerly worked as an in-house editor for more than 10 years before becoming a freelance writer. She lives just outside the city centre with her husband and two daughters, aged 6 and 8. This year has obviously been a strange one, and the publishing schedules have been affected, with lots of release dates moving to the autumn, she said. It feels a bit overwhelming to have three books out at the same time, but I'm super proud to see them on the shelves. I'm so glad that people are continuing to support their local bookshops in this difficult time. September saw the release of A Natural History of Fairies, illustrated by the US-based artist Jessica Rue and published by Quarto. It's a vintage-style cloth-bound volume presented as a journal written by a 1920s fairy expert and describes the different species of fairies around the globe, exploring where and how they live. Covering anatomy, camouflage and languages, as well as their life cycle, habits and habitats, the book shows a hidden world. In early October, Emily released Atlas of Record-Breaking Adventures, illustrated by Lucy Leatherland and also published by Quarto. It's the sixth title in the award-winning Atlas of Adventures series, which has been translated into 31 languages. This book is a collection of record-breaking animals, plants, natural landscapes, and human-made marvels from around the world, from the biggest waterfall to the deepest underground city, from the largest cave to the most deadly island. It's packed full of stunning locations and fun facts. And Emily's latest publication is Magical Creatures and Mythical Beasts, illustrated by the Society of Illustrators New York Gold Medalist Victor Ngai and published by Magic Cat. The book comes with a UV torch, which the children can use to illuminate creatures, from the Loch Ness Monster to Pegasus, unicorns, dragons, griffins and mermaids. Emily has written more than 40 books and has a picture of her smiling, as she would do because she's got her three books on show.
And this is bizarre. Questions over panels' existence. A retrospective application left a city councillor questioning why the planning committee exists. Stuart Mitchell submitted his proposals to alter the elevations of 18 Dean Lane in Winchester, despite having already completed the work. This went before a meeting of Winchester City Council's planning committee on October the 22nd, and Councillor David McLean called the process absolutely pointless. He said, Here we have another retrospective application. Someone doesn't like what they drew up initially and takes it into their own hands to change it. Feels like we serve no purpose. It's absolutely pointless. We really do need a way to police all of the retrospective applications we receive. Why do we exist if we're just completely and utterly disregarded? Chairman of the committee, Councillor Therese Evans, reminded Councillor McLean that it's not illegal nor against policy to work retrospectively. Seven out of the eight members voted to approve the application. Councillor McLean voted against, but did not give a reason as to how it went against planning criteria. Retrospective is a pain, said Councillor Mike Reed, but we do have to live with it. Although these are little changes, they do build up and become substantial. I like the larger windows beforehand. However, I cannot think of any planning reason to refuse this application. If the committee had refused the plans, Mr. Mitchell would have had the chance to appeal the decision. If he lost the appeal, he would have to reverse the works.
District prepared for a new lockdown. Winchester's MP has told the Prime Minister that there is anger amongst his constituents that the country is facing another lockdown. He was addressing Boris Johnson ahead of a new measures on coming into force for England on Thursday and a vote to approve them. The lockdown will see the country head back into a lockdown for a month until December the 2nd, limiting all but essential contact and travel outside of homes. Mr. Bryan said the Prime Minister is doing his best, and I, for one, have great grace for him on the impossible decisions he has to take. I have to say to him that the weariness and, it must be said, anger of my constituents in Winchester that we are here again are palpable. There is also a widespread scepticism about whether a second national lockdown is right or fair on Hampshire. But we have covered, and that is an issue many times I know. He continued, to help us all, can the Prime Minister tell me what we did not do in June and July when rates were right down after lockdown number one that we should have done? And what, therefore, are the lessons for after December the 2nd as we try to make the most of the lockdown too? In response, the Prime Minister thanked Winchester residents for what they're doing in terms of trying to limit the spread of virus. Mr. Johnson said, where I think we should have pushed harder was actually insisting that when people were contacted, they isolated. It does not look to me as though the numbers or the proportions have been good enough. We need to get those up in the next phase, but we can, and we will get it done. MPs voted on the lockdown on Wednesday, but Mayon Valley MP Flick Drummond said it was with a heavy heart. She told the Chronicle, no one wants a second round of restrictions, and I'm very concerned about the impact on jobs and businesses, even with the generous government support that remains in place. It was right the Prime Minister tried to find a regional solution, and equally right he now undertakes this month-long lockdown, because we risk the NHS being overwhelmed, and there is no alternative if lives are to be saved. This is something that has the support of the vast majority of the public. It's heartbreaking to now see businesses across the Mayon Valley facing another 4 weeks closed so close to Christmas. To help the situation, I'll be pushing for a return to the regional model for low infection areas like the Mayon Valley when this stricter lockdown ends. Civic chiefs at Hampshire County Council, responsible for public health, have said they are committed to driving down the COVID R rate ahead of the latest lockdown. Leader Councillor Keith Mann said, with infection rates rising across England, we must do everything we can to prevent the further spread of infection. Hampshire residents have worked hard to keep the local transmission rates down, and my heartfelt thanks for all they have done. While no part of Hampshire is featured on the government's watch list to date, we know that the virus transmits quickly and things can swiftly escalate. My hope is that by adhering to the national lockdown guidance now, we see an easing of restrictions by Christmas and get back to local decision making. After it reopened last month, the Theatre Royal will again be forced to close and refund ticket holders. A spokesman said the small team currently working are in the process of contacting all ticket holders for the events that were scheduled over the next couple of weeks at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Reopening Comedy Gala and Juliet and Romeo. Please bear with us as we try and reschedule these performances and work through the bookings in an orderly fashion. We are absolutely committed to creating our Christmas show, Four Dames in Search of Panto. Oh yes we are. We've had clarification from DCMS that rehearsals can continue during this lockdown. So we're full steam ahead with the production, getting ready for our first preview performance on Saturday, the 5th of December. While we are unable to open, work will continue to make improvements to the building, putting in place further COVID-secure measures, ready to welcome you back when we're able to. Winchester City Council have been making preparations to allow for services to continue. Leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "Throughout the first lockdown, we were pleased to keep our services running and will do so again. You may see some changes to the way some services operate as we follow public health advice. We're also directing essential resources to the critical customer responses that ensure that more vulnerable amongst us are properly supported. Our shared goal is to safeguard the health and well-being of everyone in our community, taking extra care of people who need it most."
Calls for a new model of care for veterans. A report has been launched calling for a new model of care to support armed forces veterans. The Trauma in Mind report is a year-long study into the experience of veterans and their families who require intensive healthcare services. Solent NHS Trust collaborated with NHS England and Breaking Barriers on the report and is using the findings to identify that a new service delivery model is needed. Over 150 interviews were carried out with focus groups for veterans, serving personnel, reservists, family members and professional stakeholders. Stephen James is a veteran and founding director of All Called Signs, a peer support organisation for veterans and serving military personnel. He said this report has gone to a painstaking effort to guide veterans' mental health service providers on some of the key elements that must be included in a successful offering. Key themes of collaboration and joined-up thinking, a focus on families being better integrated and included, as well as ensuring that veterans from all minorities feel represented and welcome, have to be front of mind to anyone working in this space. It's my opinion that this document should live on the desk of anyone creating, improving or working in mental health services for the military community. Solent NHS Trust has now stepped up its response to veterans and their families by offering a wider range of courses through the Recovery College with Solent Mind. David Noyes, Chief Operating Officer of the Solent NHS Trust and retired naval officer, said, "Our links with both serving and retired military personnel and their families is really important to us, and we take our obligations through the Armed Forces Covenant extremely seriously. Our commitment to service personnel is to provide an outstanding level of timely, responsive and specialist health care." Working with NHS England to support the Trauma in Mind report has enabled us to actively listen, allowing future services to be designed with to meet the unique needs of this group.
Boomtown drug dealer jailed for over £3,000 of stash. A dealer was caught with seven different drugs at Boomtown Festival, then refused to give his phone PIN number to police, the court heard. Hashan Ali Raj, 31, was spotted by security staff in a closed-off area reserved for crew during the event on the Matterley Estate near Alsford on August the 12th last year. Staff searched his man bag and found a variety of drugs, including 43.56 grams of ketamine, 21 squares of LSD and 4 grams of MDMA. He also had diazepam, alprazolam, cannabis and another unnamed Class A drug. He was initially obstructive, and when arrested he gave a no-comment interview and refused to provide the PIN number for his phone. Last Friday, Winchester Crown Court heard that the drugs were worth £3,650 and Ali Raj had £540 in cash on him. Ali Raj of Eleanor Close, Tottenham, London, pleaded guilty to possession with intent to supply Class A, B and C drugs during an earlier hearing at the same court. In mitigation, James Partridge said his client's life changed at the age of 15 when his father died. "He told me he started at 16, 17, smoking crack and heroin, which was said to be partly responsible for his antisocial criminal behaviour." Mr. Partridge continued, "At the age of 22, he'd fallen out with his peer group and moved away. He was then rough on the streets. In that position on the streets, no income, he told me he was offered an opportunity to make some money. In 2013, Ali Raj was jailed for 32 months, possessing Class A drugs with intent to supply. Mr. Partridge told the court that the dealer's frail mother will be impacted by any prison sentence he receives. He cares for her. He goes out and does her shopping. He does what he can to make her life easier. She relies on him. Ali Raj was jailed for 45 months. Jailing Ali Raj for 45 months, Judge Susan Evans, QC, said, once the drugs were inside a festival, the price is about double the street value. You took them, the drugs, into the festival, got them through security, knowing you'd get a better price inside the festival.
Halloween fines. Hampshire police attended 33 incidents over the Halloween weekend. One man in Winchester was reported for a breach of COVID-19 regulations after he allowed more than six people to gather in his house. In total, the county authority issued 92 fines, and on the Friday and Saturday, October the 30th and 31st. A spokesman said officers on duty over the weekend saw that it was a really happy Halloween for most. They saw that the majority of people were following the guidance and keeping themselves, their families and their communities safe while celebrating. However, we found a number of people still putting their social life ahead of their own health, the health of loved ones and those who are vulnerable by hosting house parties and breaching the rule of six. Three house parties in Southampton were dispersed by officers, and the owner Emporium on Elle Grove in Southsea was served with a £1,000 penalty after they were found to be allowing a group of 12 people to attend the premises for a birthday party. Assistant Chief Constable Maggie Blythe said, the only way we can get this virus under control and save lives is by everyone in the community sticking to the legislation and taking responsibility. The health regulations are in place to protect you, your friends and families. Thankfully, most people in the community understand the seriousness of the situation and are following the guidance. It was great to see a lot of people enjoying Halloween in a safe way. But this weekend has proved there are always a few people who ignore what is best for them and others and make decisions that put other people's lives at risk. The majority of the incidents we attended on Saturday night were house parties organised by adults and attended by significantly more than six people. Where this is still happening, our enforcement activity is by necessity focused and robust. We will continue to focus our efforts on those who are intent on ignoring the legislation at the same time as tackling offenders, reducing crime and protecting those who need our help. With crime rates back up to pre-pandemic levels, officers are working really hard to keep the public safe.
Young director releases film on County Regiment. Britain's youngest director has released his first feature, Debut, and is available in major supermarkets. Elliot Hassler was inspired by his great-grandfather's experience as a private in the Hampshire Regiment in World War II. He began to write the film World War II, The Long Road Home, aged 14, and the self-financed micro-budget feature was made with the help of family and friends. The film, which was completed by the time he was 16, depicts an escaped British prisoner of war's epic battle for survival whilst on the run in war-torn Italy. The film, which originally premiered as Charlie's Letters, was screened as part of the Edinburgh and Brighton Fringes in 2017, and it appeared this year at the Berlin Film Festival. The 90-minute movie is based on the true story of Elliot's great-grandfather, Charlie Standing, who was a private in the Royal Hampshire Infantry Regiment of the British Army when he was captured by the Germans at Sidi Nezir in Tunisia in February 1943. The film follows Charlie's escape from Italian internment camp as he tries to make his way home to his wife and son in Sussex. While Charlie is captured and unable to send letters, his wife is at home having to deal with her fears and temptation in the form of a handsome Canadian airman. Elliot explained, I first became inspired to make films when I was about 10. There was a school project where there was a week without lessons, and instead we made a film That was really my first experience making a movie and the work that goes into it, and I just fell in love. I then started making little films on my own, which gradually grew bigger and better, and at 14, I decided I'd make a feature. I had never been to film school, but making World War II, The Long Road Home, was very much my film school. The 3 years I spent working on that film taught me invaluable lessons about the movie-making process across all aspects, from scripting to directing to editing. He hopes to screen the film in Cannes 2022. And there's a photograph of Elliot with his camera, looking very intense. And also there is the DVD cover of World War II, The Long Road Home.
Digger submerged in river. A digger became submerged in the River Itchen during work to help the environment. On October the 28th, the vehicle belonging to Eagle Plant was abandoned at Cowdown, Itchen Abbas. It had been completing work for the Wessex Chalk Stream and Rivers Trust, with approval of the Environmental Agency and Natural England. The following day, a rescue mission began with a team on site for hours before finally pulling the digger to dry land. Now the bank has been taped off once again as the work continues. As previously reported, the scheme has sparked controversy amongst villagers. Some agree with the work, others are upset about losing access to the water. A spokesperson for the Environment Agency said, "This stretch of river is being improved by the Environment Agency as part of the Test and Itchen River Restoration Strategy. This is a long-term project which aims to work collaboratively with landowners to improve their stretch of river for the benefit of wildlife." They added, "Trees on the riverbank are being managed so that they are leaning into the river. They will continue to grow, creating new and improved habitats for the benefit of many chalk stream species. This work has been approved by Natural England and involved consultation. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has allowed these bodies to use its land."
College welcomes back pupils. Peter Simmons has marked the end of its challenging first half term return to in-person teaching. There are now one-way systems around the college campus, more frequent cleaning is carried out, and two marquees have been added to provide additional space. Students wear masks in corridors and communal areas and carry out hand washing and sanitising. Principal Sarah Russell said, "It's been a challenging half term, but as always, I've been impressed by the resilience of our students and the dedication of our teachers, who have delivered an incredible response in adapting to the new restrictions. All classrooms have been equipped with webcams to enable teachers to live stream lessons. The timetable has been adapted to provide fewer but longer slots to reduce the number of students on site. Despite the many changes in place, I'm very pleased we have continued to provide student workshops and run a full enrichment program," added Ms. Russell. "I'm extremely pleased that all teaching and learning is face-to-face on college site. As whilst we ensured effective live online learning took place during lockdown and are fully prepared if there is a need to return to online delivery."
Local projects get a boost. Community projects across the Winchester district are to be boosted by money that came originally from developers. The schemes are set to receive more than £365,000 from the Community Infrastructure Levy, known as CIL payments. But one scheme to alleviate the risk of flooding in Twyford is uncertain because of the complexities of its funding. Chris Corcoran, a member of Twyford Parish Council, told the Cabinet meeting that the non-approval of its application for £65,000 for the flood mitigation scheme jeopardised many things. It puts Twyford Parish Council at risk of not being able to deliver its housing requirements, its housing allocation, its affordable housing, its parking, its neighbourhood plan, because the flood mitigation scheme is central to a complex of schemes. The parish is juggling funding from not just the City Council, but also the County Council and South Downs National Park. The CIL application needs to be sorted in 3 or 4 months, he said. Councillor Jackie Porter told Cabinet that the County Council are invited to the CIL panel, but do not attend. They have not turned up so far. It would be helpful if they did. The CIL grants are not for maintenance, but in Councillor Jackie Porter's words, to help the community make a leap forward. To get funding are Badger Farm Community Centre kitchen upgrade, Colden Common St Vigor Way playground, outdoor gym equipment, Colden Common Recreation Ground pavilion upgrade, Denmead Georgia V playing fields multi-use games area, Headbourne Worthy St Swithin's Church new car park, Alsford West Street pedestrian improvements, Wanston Grattan Close pavilion extension, Shawford Railway Station, Community Hub Cafe and meeting rooms.
Theatre show postponed. The new lockdown has forced Chesil Theatre reschedule its show just days before it was set to run. Two by Jim Cartwright was expected to hit the stage in Winchester this month, but has now been moved to December the 5th. This production will be the first in a live streaming project, Chesil Theatre at Home, where a live show is streamed directly from the theatre online. Chairman David Small said, "Chesil Theatre has thrived on live performance, and it's our intention, all things permitting, to come back as soon as possible once the current lockdown ends." We have penciled in Saturday, December the 5th. We realise this date may not be convenient for everyone who's booked already, and inquiries for refunds can be made to tickets@chesiltheatre.org.uk. In the meantime, judges for the theatre's new writing festival, Take 10, are about to reach their final decisions on the winning 10 plays. Earlier in the year, more than 400 scripts were entered in the competition for 10-minute plays on this year's theme of The Road Not Taken. The plays are scheduled to be performed in spring 2021.
Treat all patients with trial drugs, says XPM. Therapeutic drugs should be used to treat all coronavirus patients in hospital at serious risk of illness, not just those taking part in a national clinical trial, Tony Blair has urged. The former Prime Minister said there is no safety issue in giving potential treatments that are safe and meet a minimum level of efficacy to all patients in need. Mr. Blair said that rather than offering therapeutic drugs only to those in the recovery trial, coordinated by the University of Oxford, any hospitalised patients at risk of serious illness should be offered drugs that are safe. In a foreword to a report on the coronavirus by his institute, the ex-Labour leader said, "We should give these patients the drugs and track the data from them. There'll be resistance to this because it means altering the recovery trial process, but this is a lesser risk than denying potentially life-saving drugs to those who need them. The AstraZeneca, the therapeutic drug, one of the most promising, is not part of the recovery trial in the UK, but we should urgently investigate whether we can speed up its introduction, even with limited doses being available. The recovery trial, which includes 176 UK hospital sites, found in June that a cheap steroid called dexamethasone could save the lives of people with severe COVID infection. It's currently being tested whether the antibiotic azithromycin, anti-inflammatory drug tocilizumab, convalescent plasma, and an antibody treatment called Regnacov-2 are effective treatments for coronavirus. And I apologise for my mispronunciation of these extremely interesting technical names. Mr. Blair also said that while he was optimistic that by the spring there will be vaccines and therapeutic drugs which allow a return to something like normal, he was anxious about the coming months. We simply can't afford to put our society and economy into severe restrictions for the winter months. The toll in terms of health and economy will be enormous, he warned. However, Professor Adam Flynn of the University of Bristol said, I think it'd be useful to point out to Mr. Blair and those reading his proposals that the only sound way to work out whether a specific treatment is safe and effective is by doing randomised controlled trials similar to the recovery trial. Simply giving the drugs to patients and watching to see what happens does not tell you whether or not they work because you have nothing to compare them with. Likewise, you cannot tell whether there is a safety issue in any particular group of patients until you evaluate the therapy in question in a controlled, randomised, blinding trial that is free of bias. This is particularly important for novel therapies that have not been used previously to treat other conditions. This is not the only politician this year to have expressed opinions regarding unproven therapies, and doubtless not the last, and there have been some prominent doctors behaving similarly too. But if we are to avoid harming people and wasting time and resources, we need to do this properly. The statement conveys the urgency of the situation. Randomised trials like Recovery and Solidarity can deliver clear answers extremely fast as long as they are well organised and able to recruit large numbers of patients rapidly, and they both are. By contrast, giving treatments open label slows everything down by leading us up blind alleys while playing roulette with our patients' lives. I hope this message is clear enough to help sort out this muddled thinking. And this is accompanied with a picture of former Prime Minister Tony Blair looking typically earnest and important.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 6th of November 2020. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch of memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our reader, Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, tucking in the tag at the end. And please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.